Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everybody, it's Drags and it's Wednesday, August 29th, time for episode 260 of Patriots Beat on the CLNS Media Network. Find us at clnsmedia.com. Also follow us on Twitter at CLNS Media. And for all football coverage, including, of course, the Patriots, follow us at Patriots CLNS. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its very core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo. Boston Barber and Tattoo has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, and Aaron Baines. Boston Barber and Tattoo is more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street. This week, I welcome CLNS media colleague and Patriots expert beat reporter Evan Lazar, who joined our team just a few weeks back. Many of you who follow the Patriots are already familiar with Evan's terrific work breaking down the film, doing an incredible job of deciphering the football moves of one Bill Belichick and his staff. Welcome, Evan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Boston Barber with Aaron Baines' do. I like it. I've always been a fan of Baines' hair, so I'm impressed by their skill there.
So, you know, that's a great point. Aaron Baines, and obviously many of those who are listening to this are also big Celtics fans and follow our in-depth Celtics coverage, obviously, on CLNS Media. They know that Aaron Baines is very choosy about what he puts on his body and how he decides to enhance his image on his skin. So I got to tell you, if it's good enough for Aaron Baines, it should be good enough for anybody looking for some body art. Let's start with this week's retirement of Eric Decker. Moving on to the serious world of football news, Evan, really not a surprise that Eric Decker decided to hang up the cleats. I thought it was a class move, a very heartfelt message on Instagram that he posted late Sunday afternoon. What did we see or not see in the preseason that led to his ultimate decision to walk away?
Yeah, I think that ultimately, you know, when you see guys retire from the Patriots at this point in the season, you know, early in the preseason, usually what we are seeing is that, you know, if you come into the system as late as Eric Decker did, it's just a tough place to catch up. You know, once you get behind the eight ball, especially, you know, as you sign on about August 3rd, I think it was, and, you know, you're already into training camp, about 10 days into training camp, you missed OTAs, you missed the non-mandatory stuff, all those things, you know, combined, it's a very tough offense to then catch up and be able to be where some of the other guys, even guys like Cordarrelle Patterson or someone like that, or one of the rookies, Braxton Berrios, that, you know, have been at least in the system since, you know, March or April, or even just so much further ahead than a guy like Decker. So as soon as we saw him play into the fourth quarter on Friday night, we're like, eesh, you know, he's either going to get cut here or, you know, what ended up happening with their retirement.
Yeah, and, you know, you knew pretty much right away when you saw him, I think, in that second preseason game against the Eagles. It looked like the game was too fast for him. I mean, there was one ball over the middle that he had a great chance to catch. on a crossing route from Brian Hoyer, and the ball just looked like it got on him so fast. And maybe sometimes it's a matter of the game becoming too fast, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, with him, the biggest thing was he was probably thinking a mile a minute, things are really spinning in his head really fast about where he was supposed to be in the route tree, where he was supposed to run his route, what play they were calling, all those things. And then in order to then make a play after that, catch the football, make a play after the catch, do all these types of things that, you know, a good wide receiver does in this system, it was just a lot to ask for. So I think that Eric Decker was pretty caught up in, I just want to be in the right spot for now, and then we'll figure out the rest later. And it all kind of just didn't come together quick enough for him to be able to stay on the team.
All right. So Eric Decker is not going to be in the mix. Obviously, Jordan Matthews and Malcolm Mitchell were gone pretty early in training camp, or actually in the preseason anyway. The receiving options right now, as they stand with Julian Edelman starting the season with a four-game suspension, are Chris Hogan, Philip Dorsett, Cordarrelle Patterson, Riley McCarron. Now, there are those who would say, look, Brady will make do. He's got Rob Gronkowski. He's got other receiving options. He's got James White. But how concerned are you about the depth at the receiver position?
Well, I think what's concerning about it is, you know, we're going to find out in the first 4 weeks of the season what it's like without Julian Edelman. But what if there's an injury down the line that's one of those things where someone's not going to come back, right? If Chris Hogan or Julian Edelman now were to go down, or even Philip Dorsett, who's a guy all of a sudden who's really important for this team, if he was to go down with an injury, then we're really talking about the depth being thin. I think that right now, on paper, they're probably okay because, as you mentioned, they have Rob Gronkowski. They have the stable of running backs that can all catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, James White, Rex Burkhead, we're hoping we're going to see Sony Michel at some point this year. So all these things add up to, you know, when you really look at it, they have eight or nine guys that can catch the ball and make plays with the ball in their hands and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily that the whole passing offense I'm so worried about, but you got to be a little bit worried about the depth. I mean, what happens if you do lose one of those top three guys? I think that you're going to get a lot of Cordarrelle Patterson. You're going to get a lot of whichever guy that they end up keeping between Riley McCarron and Braxton Berrios. Maybe one of those guys ends up back on the practice squad and they go and look to move for a veteran here at the end of training camp before cutdowns. We saw it last year. Belichick's not, you know, shy about making trades, obviously, this time of year and adding a guy like a Philip Dorsett, as he did last year, or Marquise Flowers, or whoever it ended up being. So I think that the Patriots will be squarely in the market coming this next week or so in the wide receiver market for a guy. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to be Demaryius Thomas or Dez Bryant or one of these big names that have been floated out there, but it's going to be, I would be shocked if they don't make a move for somebody or sign someone that's released by another team or something like that.
I'll tell you another name that people should not sleep on, and I know a lot of Patriots fans who have watched him realize that he's become a very significant part of the offense, is Jacob Hollister. I actually think he could be a huge, could play a huge role in the receiving game in the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, great point. I mean, he has just kind of taken everybody by storm this offseason, it seems, and into training camp in the preseason. Everyone in that locker room is singing Jacob Hollister's praises and how hard he has worked to kind of take that next step, go from a guy that was undrafted to now a guy that, you know, can really be, I think, the number two tight end in this depth chart right now is Jacob Hollister. You know, Dwayne Allen.
I don't think there's any question about that. I really, not to cut you off, but I don't think there's any question about that, Evan. He is the number two right now.
Yeah, he's the number two. I think that there's going to be a lot of those move tight end routes that, you know, we've seen in the past from other number two tight ends behind Gronkowski. Seam routes, things on the, moving him around the inside and the outside of the formation, lining him up in the slot, maybe lining him up in the backfield a little bit and throwing him at, you know, routes into the flat and stuff like that. he's going to be good after the catch. He's a fast guy. He's like kind of in more of a mold of a wide receiver than a tight end at times. So I think that there's a lot of good things that Jacob Hollister can do in this offense that we are starting to see. Obviously, we didn't get to see him on Friday night because of the minor injury that he's dealing with. But I agree. I think that he's going to be a big part of this, or at least the guy that's going to hold a role. I'm not sure if he's going to, you know, catch 60 passes or anything like that. But I think that he'll be a guy that's going to get some balls this year.
Okay. Alex Barth, our CLNS media colleague, and I talked about this on Sunday at Gillette Stadium. I'm more concerned about the depth in the running game than I am the receiving game, because Tom Brady controls the pass game, right? I mean, obviously,
right.
He decides where the ball is going to go, and he can check down. He can get creative. He, in many years in the past, has been one of his own best pass protectors for the way he moves around in the pocket. But the running game is a different story, and the running game concerns me. When you take a look at Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead already dinged up and having not played the last couple of weeks, Jeremy Hill did get injured in that game on Friday night, late in the game. Why he was in there, you know, only Bill Belichick knows for sure. But at this point, your options are Ralph Webb, James White, Jeremy Hill, Mike Gillisley, and Brandon Bolden, because the others are injured. What do you make of the running back situation?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's starting to get to the point where I almost think that we're going to see Brady chucking the ball 45, 50 times a game, some of these games, especially early on in the season before Sony Michel gets back. Because what else are they really going to do? They don't have necessarily a guy that's your traditional workhorse running back, or even a guy like a Deion Lewis, who is, you know, exceptional between the tackles and is a very hard-nosed runner despite his size. So I don't think that you're going to necessarily see that Jeremy Hill is going to be a 250 carry guy, you know, this season for the Patriots, just because he has to be. I don't think that they're going to force him into that role necessarily. I think it's going to obviously be a running back by committee, so they're going to pass the ball around to everybody or hand the ball off to just about everyone. But I wouldn't be surprised at all, especially in those first 4 weeks of the season, if you really see a spread them out Tom Brady and shotgun. He has all of his fast little guys around him that can, you know, create after the catch. And that's kind of the offense that you see. And you just see Brady getting the ball out of his hands in 2.2, 2.3 seconds. And he's just dumping the passes off to guys like James White and Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett and Cordarrelle Patterson, and letting them run with it. Because honestly, you know, we've seen in the past that short passing game in New England kind of becomes an extension of the running game. And I think that that's kind of where we're headed, because as you said, you know, there's a couple guys that are dinged up. And other than that, there's really not a lot of guys that are known for being workhorse running backs. Maybe Jeremy Hill early on in his career was that kind of guy, and maybe he can get back to it. But I think that's expecting a lot out of him.
Yeah, okay. But let's say that they go Tom Brady in the shotgun, Tom Brady empty backfield a lot. Aren't teams going to play closer to the line of scrimmage and send extra pressure up the middle? I mean, that's been kind of the MO against the Patriots when they do that. And, you know, the reason the Patriots, I think, have been able to get away with that is they have the great, you know, neutralizer in Rob Gronkowski, who can get open incredibly quick off the line of scrimmage and become a release for and Julian Edelman, when he's available, become quick releases for Tom Brady.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, the one thing that I will say is that they do have some speed on the outside. You know, Philip Dorsett is obviously a fast guy. Cordarrelle Patterson is not a guy that necessarily you want to see running deep routes all the time, because it's just not, he's not ever been really that consistent doing it in his career with the route running. But I think that, you know, in order to combat that, you can do things with Rob Gronkowski and Philip Dorsett, especially, that are able to kind of keep the defense honest, pass the ball deep down the field a little bit. We didn't see Tom Brady attempt any deep passes, really, except that one to Will Tye, which was kind of a head scratcher on Friday night, where they threw the fade, you know, on a third down play. So it is a little interesting to see, you know, why is that happening? Is that just a preseason thing to kind of keep Tom Brady protected? That's kind of the way I'm leaning, obviously. But he was basically getting the ball out in 2.1, 2.2 seconds. He wasn't hanging on to the ball. He didn't attempt a pass or complete a pass beyond 10 yards downfield. He only attempted two passes beyond 10 yards downfield out of his 18 pass attempts on Friday night. So obviously they are getting the ball out of his hands quickly, I think, for the preseason purposes, just so that he doesn't take too many hits. But I think that overall, I mean, I'm sure he'll hang on to it a little bit longer in the regular season, but I think that that's kind of where we're headed. I really do. I don't think that necessarily, you know, that they're going to let Brady sit back there and scan the field for too long and look for too many deep patterns like they were last year. Last year, you know, obviously with Cooks in the mix and with Julian Edelman out of the mix, they really became a vertical passing offense. I mean, they were running air raid concepts, you know, Yankees and long passes and goes to Cooks on the outside and stuff like that. I saw Mike Leach, the air raid master at Washington State, tweeted out something a few weeks ago about how the Super Bowl was basically all air raid. And it's true. It was basically all air raid. The Patriots are running all sorts of vertical passing concepts and seam routes and go routes on the outside and big over routes and stuff like that. So it was, I think we're going to see a very different offense, which I think is going to make the offense, at least to the naked eye, look more like what we're used to in New England with the short passing game. But the question is really going to be, is it going to be more effective, is more important than that, you know, Patriots fans saying, oh, this looks like the Tom Brady and right. the Patriots offense that we're used to. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, especially in those first 4 weeks of the season, how they move the football. But obviously with Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels as the brain trust there, I'm sure that they're going to figure it out, and I'm sure that they're going to score plenty of points. And I think that the defense is going to ultimately end up being the thing that we're all kind of, is it good enough to win a Super Bowl? I don't think that we're really going to be questioning, is Tom Brady and the offense good enough?
Speaking with Evan Lazar, CLNS Media Patriots beat reporter with over 8 million users across the U.S. and Canada. Game Time is the top destination for last-minute tickets to all major sporting events, concerts, and shows. Game Time is built for the urban millennial and Gen Z customer that is always on the go and constantly optimizing for the best last-minute experience. Unlike Ticketmaster and StubHub, who overwhelm you with so many choices and steps, the Game Time app shows you only the best values and makes buying tickets incredibly fast and easy. To make selecting tickets even easier, Game Time also shows you an actual high-res photo of your view from the seat. Plus, the Game Time guarantee has you covered. They will guarantee that you'll receive your tickets in time for the event, and they'll be valid for entry. If that doesn't happen for some unknown reason, unlikely reason, Game Time will locate comparable replacement tickets or, of course, give you a 100% refund. Whether you're looking for sports, music, or theater tickets, you can find all of them under one roof at Game Time. For $15 off your first purchase, visit usegametime.com/beat. That's promo code BEAT, and visit usegametime.com. Once again, usegametime.com/BEAT. Speaking with Evan Lazar of CLNS Media, covering the New England Patriots, along with myself and Alex Barth. All right, going into the break, you mentioned the Patriots defense. And specifically, I think what a lot of people are concerned about in watching the three preseason games, two things. Patriots are giving up a lot of big pass plays again when they don't get to the quarterback. They've been doing a good job getting, you know, rushing the quarterback, Evan, but when they don't get there, they've been giving up big pass plays and they're not getting off the field on third down. Those, to me, are two huge red flags.
Yeah, I mean, here we go again, you know, kind of with that bend, don't break style on Friday night. That was basically what we saw, you know, give up a lot of yards between the 20s and then give up field goals in the red. It's a painstaking way to watch a football game. It's very aggravating. You go and you see some of these other teams that have maybe some more talent on their defenses that are really able to impose their will, you know, like a Jacksonville or a Minnesota or something like that, but those teams are able to kind of control the game with their defense, and the Patriots kind of always just seems like are kind of holding it together with duct tape and making sure that Tom Brady doesn't have too much of a deficit to overcome at one point in time in the game, which obviously leads to a lot of wins because, you know, you have an offense that moves the ball so productively as they do and score so many points as they do. But I think that in terms of giving up the big plays, I do think that Brian Flores is trying his best and kind of experimenting here in the preseason with some things that are going to limit some of the big plays, and hopefully he can turn up the scheming on third down as well. Obviously, in the preseason, we're not seeing like a ton of scheming and stuff like that or a ton of game planning.
Right.
So hopefully when the regular season comes around, they can kind of do a little bit more with that. I think that, you know, a big issue with everybody right now is how Stephon Gilmore has looked in the games. Obviously, your big money number one corner, you don't want to see him getting burned like he did against a guy like Curtis Samuel, for example, who turned him around in that Carolina game. But the big thing I think that I look at is that all the things that Stephon Gilmore has gotten beaten on, he got beat on that crossing pattern, for example, against Washington, and then he got beat by Samuel. You look at all these things, and he's in cover one man coverage against really shifty and fast guys like a Samuel who can just flat out burn. And you watch the play, and the Panthers kind of set up that entire side of the field for Samuel to run that route against Gilmore. And there's just a lot of space to cover for one guy. And now, I'm not making excuses for getting turned around and completely getting fooled on the route. That's obviously not what you want to see. But I think that, you know, and sometimes the other team has good players too. And the other team has playmakers that are going to be able to make plays. And we see across the NFL every week, all these crazy good receivers that some of these teams have. We're going to see it week one right off the bat with DeAndre Hopkins against Gilmore is going to be a great matchup and so on and so forth. They're right down the line of the regular season. I mean, I can name a number one receiver on just about every team that's going to be a problem to defend for the Patriots pretty much for the entire season, besides maybe when they play Buffalo.
Right.
So it's going to be one of those things where there's just always going to have somebody that's going to be able to make plays on the other side of the ball. So at some point you have to tip your cap. At the other point, though, I get it. I mean, it's not a great look to the naked eye when, you know, they're getting torched for these big plays. I'm really interested to see what Brian Flores does, not to take anything. I think a lot of Patriots fans are starting to take away stuff from Matt Patricia and kind of call Matt Patricia out for the reason why the defense has looked one way for the first, you know, for his tenure here as the defensive coordinator. And then with Brian Flores, they're kind of turning up the heat a little bit more in the preseason. But I asked Belichick about that, and he really scoffed at it. I mean, he was like, we're not game planning. We're not doing anything special to try to get after the quarterback in any better way or anything like that. The blitzing, he kind of said, was just experimental for now, trying to see what works, what doesn't work. So I do expect to see the same style that we've kind of seen with Matt Patricia, just another guy calling the plays. The question really is that money down, that third down? We've seen, you know, Doug Peterson in the Super Bowl, Doug Peterson throughout that entire run kind of really made his money on third down with some great play calls and scheming and play designs and stuff like that. That's where Brian Flores is going to have to make his mark on this defense. Is can he come up with some creative coverages and creative pressures, marriage those together, and get off the field on third down? Because that's a big problem for this defense over the last couple of years.
Well, it was a huge problem, obviously, in the Super Bowl. 10 third down conversions was a big reason they lost the Super Bowl. And Friday night, what was Carolina, 8-for-15 on third down? When you're north of 50%, or the opposition's north of 50% in converting against you on third down, more likely than not, you lose the game.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, in today's NFL, that's the chess match, really. You know, on first and second down, a lot of these teams run kind of what their go-to schemes are. Patriots play a lot of cover one robber, a lot of cover three on the outside with some matchup zone and stuff like that. That's kind of their bread and butter. That's what's going to get them through the season. And then on third down in the big times of the game, whether it's third down in the fourth quarter or just third downs in the second half in general, is really where the defensive coordinator and the offensive coordinator kind of have a showdown. And that's where they kind of have to come up with ways to get off the field or stay on the field, whichever way that you're looking at it. So we'll see what happens. You know, last year what happened was the Patriots would just kind of stay in their basic, you know, cover ones, man coverages for the most part on third down and just rely on their guys to cover. And more times than not, unfortunately, it didn't work out. So this year, let's see what happens. Maybe Brian Flores has some more tricks up his sleeve. Maybe he gets a little bit more creative on third down with the pressures up front, with the blitzing that we've kind of seen over these last couple weeks. That's what I'm hoping for, at least. You know, I'm really hoping that they have a lot more talent in the front seven, I think, this year than they have in the last couple years. Guys like Derek Rivers, Adrian Claiborne, hopefully Dante Hightower will be back and fully healthy. You know, things like that, I think, add up to them having a much better front seven, a much better pass rush. So let's see if they can kind of get a little bit more aggressive on third down.
Well, and sometimes we see Bill Belichick make a move, and it is a precursor of something that's about to happen. Jason McCourty played safety, and a lot was made of that on Friday night against Carolina. He played some safety, and Belichick talked about it on Saturday in a conference call, saying that his run support technique and his instincts are very good and something that really, you know, pointed towards the Patriots giving him a shot. Then we find out the Patriots let go of Eddie Pleasant, a veteran safety. And so that leaves you with three established safeties, right? Devin McCourty, Daron Harmon, and Patrick Chung. Then after that, you have Jordan Richards, Nate Ebner, and pretty much throw it in the wind of who else is going to play safety. So I think probably you're looking at Jason McCourty. If one of those guys goes down or they need to get creative, he's definitely going to play safety.
Yeah, well, what Belichick said was really kind of rings true with Jason McCourty, which is that, you know, having that position flexibility is something that's going to help this guy make the team.
Yes.
Obviously, if he just plays corner, I just don't think that he's – I think it's going to become a numbers game with a lot of these younger guys on the team. You know, I've been saying it, but I really think that there's four locks at corner: Stephon Gilmore, Eric Rowe, the second-round pick, Duke Dawson, and Jonathan Jones. So then it becomes that fifth spot. Do you keep a guy like Jason McCourty, who's a veteran, who doesn't necessarily play a ton of special teams, isn't kind of one of the – obviously, I think he could play special teams, but it's just not really something that he's done over the last couple of years. So you have guys like a J.C. Jackson and a Keon Crossan and a Cyrus Jones and these guys that bring a ton of value in the kicking game. Is it going to push Jason McCourty off the depth chart? Probably, but then if you can have him play – at either cornerback or safety, now all of a sudden you had a lot more value to his overall standing on the roster, which is what kind of Belichick was saying, was that, you know, when you have that positional flexibility, when you're able to move a guy around to back up other positions besides just his own position group, it's huge in terms of being able to keep him on the roster. So I think that that's obviously what they were trying to do with Jason McCourty. I'll say this. If you put Jason McCourty as a single high safety in cover one or cover three like they did on Friday night, he's going to get exposed in that role. I just don't think that that's a role that he's going to be able to hold down in the NFL. We saw it on Friday night when he had to help Keon Crossan on that crossing pattern, a deep over route, and he just wasn't able to catch up to the football, and he had plenty of time. You know, if brother Devin was back there, Daron Harmon, I think that pass gets broken up. So I worry about him in that type of role. But I do think what he can do is play near close to the line of scrimmage.
Right, and that's
in
what
Belichick – supporting the run.
Right, and that's what Belichick was talking about the other day is I don't think they have any interest in having him roam. No way. I mean,
right.
You want to put him in a position where he's, like his brother, a very sound tackler, and he plays very good in zone schemes, right? That's kind of been his MO coming out of Cleveland, is that if you put him in some type of zone scheme and put him close to the line of scrimmage, that's where he excels.
Yeah, I think that some matchup coverage underneath, maybe on tight ends, and slot receivers potentially, kind of more in a role of a Patrick Chung almost. That I think that he can definitely do. And it's actually something that Devin has done in the past too, just depending on the opponent. They sometimes move him and basically play him at corner when the time comes or when they want him in that role, and they kind of let Daron Harmon take the responsibilities as the roamer in the deep part of the field. So I think that's kind of where Jason McCourty could find his spot on this roster behind those top three, is being another one of those guys that's kind of a matchup-based player, opponent to opponent, as kind of a slot corner safety hybrid type player. I think a lot like Patrick Chung, honestly, in that type of role. And he does have really good instincts in both the run and the pass game. He is a really smart player that's been around, much like Devin, that he has that kind of football IQ that you can see that he can key on things and find out, sniff things out in the run game and do things like that. So I think that is an interesting little wrinkle that they add, and not one that I expected them to do. I thought that he was kind of going to be a boundary corner and that would be about it here, but it looks like that they want to play him a little bit more inside the numbers and closer to the box potentially. So that's something that I think that he can do, and something that I think this team is kind of missing more than kind of that boundary guy, with Eric Rowe really solidifying himself as the other guy opposite of Gilmore on the boundary.
Chatting with Evan Lazar of CLNS Media, covering the Patriots for us. RX Bar, whole food protein bars with simple, real ingredients. RX Bar wants to build things the right way. RX Bar believes in the power of transparency and lets the core ingredients do all the talking, with all of them listed on the front of the packaging. You'd likely recognize RX Bar at the shelf. They're the ones who have egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruits, and spices like sea salt or cinnamon. Turns out real food ingredients actually taste really good. Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, there's definitely an RX bar for you. Me, I absolutely love the mint chocolate bar. Great flavor, no aftertaste, and a great boost for a PM workout. Of course, Patriots play a lot of games at night, and an RX bar before I cover a game at night on primetime is always a way to power through and get through the night and bring all of you great Patriots coverage. And for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/trags. Enter the promo code TRAGS, TRAGS, at checkout. Again, for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/trags and enter the promo code TRAGS at checkout. All right, any surprises, Evan Lazar, in the as we head into the final preseason game on Thursday night at MetLife Stadium against the New York Football Giants? If, like, let's say Jordan Richards is playing the entire game, should we read anything more into that than just that the Patriots need to field a roster of 11 players on both sides of the ball, as Belichick always likes to say?
I would hope that we could read a little bit into that. I mean, he was playing in the fourth quarter in the third preseason game too. I mean, at some point in time, they have to, you know, kind of realize that experiment is just not going to work. That the player just, I personally think that Jordan Richards is not a good enough athlete to play at the NFL level. I really do. I think that's kind of where we're at. I mean, you see him in coverage. The guy just can't do anything well, it seems. He can't really tackle.
Harsh, but cover. The film don't lie, Evan. The film don't lie.
No, it just doesn't. I just don't. I mean, the only thing that he really contributes to this team is that he played on a lot of special team snaps last year, led the team in special team snaps last year. So he definitely has a role as a special teamer, but I think that they have plenty of special teams type guys that can kind of go and play his roles on those kick coverage units, and they'll be perfectly fine. I mean, they have so many guys that they kind of prioritize as special teamers. And last year they lost, remember, Nate Ebner to that IR injury pretty early on in the season. So now they kind of needed another one of those safeties to kind of step up into that special teams role, and it ended up being Jordan Richards. Nate Ebner is back now. They have Brandon King. They obviously have Matthew Slater. I think Nicholas Grigsby is the guy that has a really good chance of making the roster, kind of as a core special teams guy. And one of those corners, the fifth corner on the roster, and Jonathan Jones also is those two guys are going to be special teams guys. They're going to have to play on special teams. So I think they have plenty of guys that are going to be able to play on special teams, and I don't see how you can just keep Jordan Richards on the roster because he might be good at that. The other guy that I think that might be, I don't know if any has any trade value necessarily, so maybe they just outright release him, is a Landon Roberts, who I think has kind of solidified himself a little bit as a kind of a voice in that linebacker group and as a veteran presence. So I don't know if I'm 100% sold that he's going to get cut more so than I am with Jordan Richards, but I think Roberts is a guy with Juwan Bentley kind of stepping up and really blossoming since he got here, is probably the fourth linebacker in the group and a guy that maybe they move on from. I just think that guys like a Nicholas Grigsby, like I said, is going to potentially make this team. Maybe they end up keeping a guy like a Christian Sam, the other rookie linebacker that they drafted, over a Landon Roberts, just because they kind of know at this point what a Landon Roberts is. And I think that Sam has a little bit more potential down the road because he has a little bit more functional athleticism than Roberts does. So I would look at those two guys who I think that no Patriots fans are going to lose much sleep over seeing either of those two guys released from this team or potentially moved for like a late round draft pick or a depth receiver or something like that. Not Jordan Richards has no value on the trade market whatsoever,
no.
But Landon Roberts might, have a little bit of value, not saying that you're going to be able to move him. I've heard things floated like moving him and Malcolm Brown for something. Maybe that is potentially something that, they could do. Malcolm Brown is another guy that has some trade value, only under contract for this year. So there's a little bit less than maybe if he had another year on that fifth year option or another year in an extension or something like that. But I think if you're looking for a guy to do a player for player swap, in order to get a receiver in here or get someone in here to contribute, whether it's the receiver or elsewhere, Malcolm Brown, I'd say, is the guy that has the most trade value and probably is the most expendable out of the guys that have trade value on this team.
Okay, two names, and then we'll wrap it up. Keyonte Davis and Geno Grissom. Do both of them, neither of them, one of them, make the roster?
I say neither right now. I know that is probably goes against a lot of what people have seen in these first three preseason games, with both of those guys playing a lot. I think Geno Grissom, he's another one of those special teams guys that's going to have to make the team on special teams. I don't know if there's enough room on the roster for another one of those special teams only type players. And, he's added some things in the pass rush in the preseason. He's got to the quarterback a little bit. But overall, his awareness, his ability to diagnose plays on the field is just not where it is needs to be for him to be a guy that they can rely on at the defensive end position. There's a play on Friday night where he was supposed to contain on the outside, and instead he just bent around the edge, and Cam Newton escaped and found Christian McCaffrey for a first down on a second down play. And Geno Grissom, yeah, he made a nice pass rush move to get around the tackle, but he completely blew his assignment, and Cam Newton had a really easy escape route. I don't think is something that they're going to be able to rely upon. And with Keyonte Davis, it's a great story to come back from the really serious neck injury that he had. And obviously, against the Eagles, he played a lot and logged a lot of pressures and was able to get to the quarterback a couple times. But when you really look down at the film and kind of broke it down, the two sacks that he had were pretty much cleanup sacks late in the down. And most of the pressures were just him pushing the pocket in a bull rush and getting inside on the line of scrimmage and rushing from over a guard or over the center, which is a nice little versatility thing that he has going for him. But basically what I'm saying is I did not see an overly twitchy, athletic pass rusher that was, the film did not back up the stats in that instance about, all these pressures that he accumulated were kind of all, a little bit of a facade, I thought, and I didn't really see a player that was necessarily clicking big time. Like, if you watch, Keyonte Davis's tape and then you watch Derek Rivers's tape, for example, you can tell that there's a very big difference in terms of potential, out of the defensive line. So I think Keontae Davis is the guy that they would like to keep around. I'm not really sure if they were to release him if he would have tons of interest necessarily on the waiver wire market. Remember, a lot of people forget that when they waive a player, in order for another team to pick up that player, they have to put him on the 53-man roster. You know, no one can pick anybody up and then put this to put him on a practice squad. You know, they have to get put onto the active roster. So I think that Keontae Davis, I don't know if I necessarily see another team being eager unless they really liked him in the pre-draft process and the injury was the only reason why they didn't draft him, which could be the case, I suppose. But overall, I just don't see how either one of those guys, the Patriots have a lot of depth on the defensive line all of a sudden and have really added some talent to the defensive line with Claiborne and Rivers coming back. So it's kind of it's a log jam. It's a numbers game. I mean, we're even talking about Malcolm Brown, you know, former first round pick, being an odd man out. So I just don't know if Keontae Davis has done enough in my eyes.
Evan, how can people follow you on Twitter? Because you are certainly one of the best follows on the Patriots beat.
You can follow me at Twitter at EZLAZAR, Lazar, just like my last name, EZ, my initials. And yeah, follow me on there. And obviously at CLNSmedia.com is where you can read me and listen to my podcast, hopefully, that will be launching very soon. And obviously we'll have you on tracks as soon as that gets going. And then, you know, the season's right around the corner. So I'm very eager to stop breaking down preseason tape and start breaking down the real thing here soon.
You and me both. I'm looking forward to sharing the press box with you, Evan, as we double team Patriots coverage this year on CLNS Media. I want to thank everyone for downloading today's podcast. I want to thank our terrific guest, Evan Lazar, and our sponsors, Boston Barber and Tattoo, Game Time, and RX Bar. For producer Mike Alonji, our executive producer Larry H. Russell, and the founder of the network, Nick Gelso. This is Mike Petralia, and this has been the Patriots Beat Podcast, powered by CLNS Media.